with a chance of fog.
Chance of fog in the afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the second hour of the French Connection. I'm your host, Daryl Bradford Smith, and we are honored to have a wonderful American and a great researcher named Michael Collins Piper with us. In fact, Michael, I'd like to do something regularly with you because your information is so vast and so pointed that there's just every time you get on the radio, we're just talking about something very important.
Yeah, I hope that people are learning something. If they aren't learning something, at least maybe it's stimulating them to learn something or to think further about things above and beyond the box.
That's right. Well, this isn't talk radio. This really is not talk radio for me. This is not entertainment. This is a service I'm providing the country on my own dime to try to save the place. And I got to be honest with you, Mike. If we ever did save the place, I would melt away into history as quick as you could shake a stick. You know. Now here we are, the Levant affair. Let's set it up a little bit here. Nasser was what they were calling at the time a Soviet. he was a Soviet puppet. But the fact is, he was showing some independence from a lot of people. Nasser was, and in fact, he was actually the mentor to Saddam Hussein at one point, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. What he was, Nasser was a pan-Arab nationalist. He had dreams of uniting the entire Arab world. Well, if you know anything about the Arab world, that's a pretty tough proposition. But that was his dream, and he was becoming a very influential leader in Egypt. He had a lot of enemies, of course. And Israel, which of course had been newly established, didn't like the idea that there was this powerful Egyptian leader there. So basically what they decided they needed to do, they couldn't kill Nasser, although they did make several attempts to do it. What they decided to do was try to destabilize Nasser's government so that, number one, Western governments would not be inclined to be friendly to Nasser. Number two, to destabilize him just because they wanted to destabilize him. And number three, also make the Muslims look bad. Now, okay, Nasser was a Muslim, but his regime was primarily a secular regime. He was not an Islamic fundamentalist. He was really not even really Islamic, according to a lot of the hardline Muslims.
That's right.
So what the Israelis decided to do was send spies, actually saboteurs, terrorists. Let's use the word exactly what they were. The Israelis sent terrorists into Egypt disguised as members of the Muslim Brotherhood. In other words, these were Israeli Jews, and I think there may have been a couple of European Jews involved too. But they went into Egypt pretending to be Muslim Brotherhood members, pretending to be terrorists representing the Muslim cause, and they proceeded to start bombing or otherwise attempting to bomb installations belonging to Great Britain, and here we go, fellow Americans, installations belonging to the United States, including, I believe, the U.S. Information Agency office. In other words, to sum all this complicated information up, our so-called friends, the Israelis, were committing terrorist acts against the Egyptian government and making it look like Islamic fundamentalists were responsible. And these acts weren't even against the Egyptian government. They were against the United States government and the American people. American tax dollars paid for those American offices in Egypt.
That's right. I got to be honest with you, I can't imagine that at some level certain elements within our government knew they were doing it.
Well, I'll tell you what's interesting. I have a quote here from Benjamin Givley. He was head of Israeli military intelligence. And this is a direct quote. It was documented after the Israelis themselves investigated the affair, and they called it the Levant affair. What he said was, the Israeli origin should be totally covered while attention should be shifted to any other possible factor. In other words, what he's saying is these terrorists, these Israelis, Jewish Israeli terrorists, were supposed to go in there, commit these crimes against the British and American installations, and make it look like anybody else but the Israelis were responsible. Now, that's terrorism. And as President Bush has said, you're either with the terrorists or you're against us. And I'm here to tell you, the Israelis were committing terrorism.
Well, let's move it up to 1967 where, and here's a new wrinkle on this. I had Lieutenant Commander Innes on, and in his presentation, he said not only were there reasons for them to be trying to get America to you know, maybe possibly attack Egypt, but also he said that they were actually following intelligence that they were mass murdering captured Egyptian soldiers from a Sinai engagement, and they were also, the Americans were monitoring activity on the Golan Heights, which had the Americans had publicly told them not to get involved with. So he said there were probably three reasons why this whole thing happened. Can you confirm?
Well, you know what? I tell you what. You and I are here talking, and we know exactly what you're talking about. But you know, our listeners, probably a lot of them don't know we're talking about an American ship called the USS Liberty.
Yeah.
That was deliberately attacked in June of 1967 by combined Israeli forces they were actually the Army, Navy, and the Air Force, although it was at sea. There apparently were Army elements involved in this attack. I don't have my information handy, but I can never get the date straight. It was either June 7th or June 8th, 1967.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, at that time, it happened to be on the eve of the 1967 war. These Israeli forces attacked the USS Liberty, slaughtered 34 Americans, wounded 172 others. They tried to sink the ship. Now,
yeah.
Let me tell you something interesting. I just happened to write a letter to the editor of my hometown newspaper about the attack on the USS Liberty.
Yeah.
And one of the points I made in that letter was that all of the surviving brother servicemen from aboard that ship who are alive today still insist that the Israelis did it deliberately. Well, this newspaper, which is owned by the Newhouse family, hardline right-wing supporters of Israel, do you know they actually changed it to say some of the survivors say that it was deliberate? Now, that's going to be a big surprise when I bring that to the fellas from the USS Liberty Survivors Association to find out that a newspaper unilaterally decided that they don't all agree on this. But the fact is, to the best of my knowledge, to a man, all of the survivors who live today,
yeah,
say that the attack was deliberate. They say that there was an American flag flying in the wind.
And they even took a flag that had been damaged by the attack and put a larger one up.
That's correct. Thank you for filling that little point in there, Daryl, because
mm-hmm.
That's very important. And, you know, we're not talking. This is one thing which is very important for the people who are out there listening, particularly anyone who might have doubts about it or who might think we're exaggerating here. This wasn't just like one. It wasn't like a plane swooped over and dropped a bomb on the ship, or somebody fired a torpedo and then they said, oh, damn, that's an American ship. We didn't mean to do that. No, this attack took place over what, like over a period of several hours at least. It was a
well, they were actually, and here's, because I just did the interview, and the lieutenant commander told me, they began to surveil them over a period of hours, and then the attack actually took place for about an hour, and
right.
they were swooping in, and they had attack planes,
right.
They had
right.
attack helicopters, they had attack gunboats, they had torpedo boats, they torpedoed the midsection of the boat, and when these sailors started deploying their life rafts, they actually shot dead people that were dropping lifeboats.
That's a war crime.
That is a war
That's
crime.
A war
Absolutely
crime right
a war crime.
You know, now, Daryl, here again, I know that there's somebody out there listening who's probably saying, well, it was probably an accident. But we'll come
Excuse
back
me?
To that. We'll come back to that after the break.
When we come back, ladies and gentlemen, we'll let Daryl Bradford Smith laugh at that accusation. Gentlemen, we're back. We've been involved here with Michael Piper, just up to our eyeballs in sickness extraordinaire about the Zionist movement across the world. I mean, the treachery of this group is it's beyond anything any normal person or rational person can even accept in a single dose. You need to visit this subject over a long period of time just to wrap your brain around the depth of deception and murder and assassination and obfuscation and criminality in this group. It is astonishing how far they're willing to go to meet their, you know, to get their ends met. I mean, this is an immoral group beyond anything any history has ever written about. And here we go. We can talk about even things as such as Khobar Towers, U.S. Coal, and these attempted bombings against our own soldiers and many others. This stuff goes on. Gladio was part of a network that they were set up. I mean, it goes on and on, Michael. What are we to do with these people?
You know what I think is, you know, about this whole thing with the USS Liberty, you know, officially now Israel, of course, said it was an accident and apologized, and they paid massive amounts. I shouldn't say massive. They paid minimal damages to the U.S. government. But, you know, the sailors of the USS Liberty were told to keep their mouths shut, not to tell anybody about it. And, you know, the damnedest thing about it all is that their intent was not to just wound the ship. Their intent was to sink the ship, and they would have sunk the ship unless the guys had not managed to get out the word. And then what happened was the United States initially ordered in guys to come to their rescue.
Well, actually, the ships that were present did, but Washington, D.C. called them back.
Thank you. Yes, thank you. That's correct. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, some of the Navy, they tried to come to their rescue. And by this time, the Israelis had backed off because they knew they failed. But, you know, President Lyndon Johnson himself, there's an anecdote that's been related by former CIA director, Jesse Helms, former CIA director Richard Helms, who in his memoirs said that he's convinced the attack was deliberate. But he related the story of how he was in President Johnson's office the day after the attack on the USS Liberty. And he said to the president, he said, you know, these bastards just attacked and killed our men. He said, you know, he says, we've got to do something. We've got to retaliate here. And Johnson, you know, Johnson, he was the ultimate politician. He says, Dick, you're right. He says, but you know, we got a problem here. he says, this attack on our U.S. ship by these Israelis should be on the front page of the New York Times today, but instead it's on page whatever it was, A27.
Yeah.
He says, if the American media is going to cover this up, even I, as President of the United States, am not going to really have much opportunity to do anything about it. I'm paraphrasing, of course, but I mean, this anecdote that I'm relating, you know, is just absolutely 100% true. It's been broadcast in a video about the attack on the Liberty. There's several very good videos that have been done on the attack on the Liberty.
Well, here's the next thing. I mean, this was foretold by a very brave and very bold and brazen Zionist who found out what he was really involved in, named Benjamin Friedman, and he came out with what he had seen in his first-person accounts from 1916 forward, and set it up in 1961 that we were going to have these kinds of horrible things visited upon us because we were bought and paid for, Michael.
Yeah, he was a very, very smart guy. Benjamin Friedman was born a Jew. Oddly enough, you know, his name was Friedman, spelled F-R-I-E-D-M-A-N. But when he became a convert to Christianity and totally rejected Zionism. I'm not talking about Judaism. I'm talking about Zionism and of course, the Jewish religion as well. And there is a distinction,
yeah,
I might add. But
there
in
is
any case, that's when he changed the spelling of his name from F-R-I-E-D-M-A-N to F-R-E-E-D-M-A-N, saying that he was a freedman. And he was a very wealthy soap, he came from a soap manufacturing family in New York, and he and I had, I never knew the man, he died in the mid-60s, but a very, very good friend of mine was a very, very good friend of Benjamin Friedman's, and from what I know about Mr. Friedman through my friend who knew him, Friedman was quite a guy. He put up an awful lot of his own money.
$3 million worth.
Yeah, to try to publicize what was going on. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, what he did say, I've got the hour and 27-minute actual speech that he gave in Washington, D.C. in 61. He wasn't spot on some of his predictions, but he was spot on all of the subterfuge and control both in the United States and globally. And what we need to do now is we need to start laying out for the listeners what this global conspiracy actually is. It encompasses water systems in the United States through U.S. filter. It encompasses our drug companies. It encompasses Archer Daniels Midland, Cargill, and our food systems. It encompasses things such as our media and our film industry and our banking system. And then it also encompasses the most powerful secret organizations in the world, including the Illuminati and the Freemasons. And it also, I mean, now you might wonder, how could they control all this? When you understand that $200 trillion worth of might and power are placed behind this organization, you can start wrapping your brain around just the depths of their influence. And, I mean, $200 trillion, you can't fathom that. The American economy produces $14 trillion in a year. So they've got, in cash, about 25, 30 years worth of the American GDP sitting in banks all over different parts of our planet in gold, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, you know, an interesting part of this, you know, obviously, first and foremost among these schemers is the European-based Rothschild family, which their tentacles have spread worldwide. But you know, you have to keep in mind they've been accumulating through war profiteering and money lending. They have been accumulating a vast fortunes for several hundred years, and they have been seeding other wealthy families, seeding as in S, capital S E E D I N G,
right?
Seeding other fortunes to spread their influence. You know, there's like, for example, you know, and this has been something. It's been a generational type thing. So
yeah.
you have families like the Bronfmans. You have people, major players in the United States, like Mortimer Zuckerman, who publishes U.S. News and World Report.
The Mellon fortune.
They have all been, you know, and even, you know, if you look into the origins of the Rockefeller family. Now, although the Rockefeller family, there's some dispute about their ethnic origins, the fact is that their early ventures in the oil industry were financed by Rothschild-controlled banks that were branches of Rothschild banks here in the United States. So we're going deep here.
Well, we've got a call from a guy that knows a lot about this, Michael, coming up right after the break. And, ladies and gentlemen, stick around for the French Connection. We don't pull punches on this show. We go right for the truth. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go right back into our discussion with my guest, Michael Piper. And, Michael, you know, we've got a caller that is well-versed in some of these subjects, and I'm going to bring him up right now. Chris, you're with me with Michael Piper. You have a question. Christopher?
Hello?
Hello, Chris.
Yes.
You have a question for Mike?
I do have a question, then I'd like to discuss the Rothschilds, if I may.
Yes, you may. Go ahead.
Michael, I wonder if you remember when Fritz Hollings published an article in the Charleston Post and Courier, which raised the issue of the project for the new American century and the neocons' domino theory, whereby they would take out Iraq and then Iran and then Syria.
Yes, if it's a, I think it's a, is it the one he wrote just as he retired or after he retired?
Yeah, that's it.
In fact, I quote that in the opening pages of my book, The High Priests of War, yeah.
And then he made a lengthy statement before the Congress, and he was roundly criticized and called anti-Semitic, but I think he's since been vindicated. Do you know what's become of him, and why doesn't he come out in the press now and warn us about what's happening in Iran as part of this domino theory of the neocons?
Well, you know, I tell you, he's Senator Hollings, he's a good man. You know, he's about 85 years old, and, you know, for him to even say what he did say was remarkable in and of itself. There are actually, you know, I tell you, it's very interesting, and I don't mean to change the subject, but I am in a way. There's a lot of other members of Congress who prior to their retirement or upon their retirement made similar remarks at different times over the years. So Fritz Hollings is not alone there. But why doesn't he come out now and do it? I guess probably because, you know, even if he did, even, you know, like I said at the outset of this program, even if I stood out here in Capitol Hill and screamed to high heaven, if no one picks up on what I'm saying and it's not broadcast in the media, who cares? So this is the thing. I mean, you and I know about what Senator Hollings wrote because I guess maybe because we're concerned enough to pay attention when that information comes to our attention. But, you know, what if Senator Hollings' words had been broadcast nightly on ABC News and NBC and CNN, lots of other people would hear about it. So the media, by omission, is able to censor things. Sometimes they distort things. Sometimes they just ignore what people have to say.
That's right. That's right. And what would you like to say about the Rothschilds' fortune?
The reason that I identify them as the family that may consider themselves the Messianic dynasty, and again, in many Jewish sects, the Messiah can pass on his messiahship to his children as king of the Jews in a lengthy dynasty. I have an article from The New Yorker, Volume 9, Number 13, Whole Number 221, 13 June 1840, printed pages 196 to 197, titled Restoration of the Jews, and it states, "We remember rumors which had currency some years ago of the Jewish capitalist Rothschild's designs to employ his wealth in the purchase of Jerusalem as the seat of a kingdom and bring back the tribes under his own guidance and sovereignty."
Very interesting.
And then there was another article in the Chicago Tribune of 2nd October 1866 on page 2, which is called Regeneration of the Holy Land, which also names the Rothschilds. And then on 8 April 1878 in the Chicago Tribune, in an article on page 2 entitled The House of Rothschilds, it says, quote, "There is a popular idea that the Rothschilds dream of yet restoring the temple and the city of Jerusalem. If so, events may now be working to meet their views. They are all earnest in the faith of their fathers and prove their Jewish convictions by breaking off all relations with the Roman government after the abduction of the little Moriara." Now,
what was the little Moriara?
That I don't know. But,
that's interesting. That term sounds very familiar to me. I've seen it. I don't know what it means. But, you know, drop off the last sentence and disregard the little Moriara, whatever that may be. I think everything that Christopher has cited here is, and I find it very, I appreciate the fact that he cited very specifically all his sources on that. That's very important because those are all quote-unquote mainstream sources. They're not right-wing smear propaganda organizations. These are all mainstream American media.
Well, we're going to jump to another example. Go ahead, Chris.
Let's jump to 1962 and a quote from David Ben-Gurion in Look magazine on page 20 in the edition of 16 January 1962. He states, quote, and this is a prediction of what will happen in the next 25 years. "With the exception of the USSR as a federated Eurasian state, all other continents will become united in a world alliance at whose disposal will be an international police force. All armies will be abolished and there will be no more wars. In Jerusalem, the United Nations, a truly united nations, his emphasis, will build a shrine of the prophets to serve the federated union of all continents. This will be the seat of the Supreme Court of mankind to settle all controversies among the federated continents as prophesied by Isaiah."
That's, I tell you, that's very, very interesting. And I tell you why it's even more interesting to me is that it fits in precisely with some of the writing. You know, granted, of course, you know, times change and new scenarios and new events impact on things, but it's kind of interesting that Ben-Gurion talked about the United Nations. Well, what's happening now is that the Zionist movement internationally has more or less shelved the United Nations, and they feel the United Nations has failed. The former Israeli ambassador to the United Nations I don't know how he pronounces his first name. It's spelled D-O-R-E. I don't know if it's Dore or Dore. Gold.
Dore Gold.
Dore. Is it Dore? Yes. He's written this book, and I know I have it on my shelf somewhere. I'm looking over several thousand books, but he's written a book called, I think it's called Tower of Babel.
Yeah.
And in that book, he says, well, the United Nations has failed, so we've got to set up an alternative to the United Nations. And that's similar to what Natan Sharansky writes in his book, The Case for Democracy, which President Bush proclaims to be his Bible for the conduct of foreign policy. So nonetheless, there is still this one world dream that the Zionist movement holds so dear. But I would argue that what's happening now is that because the Zionists have become so entrenched in positions of power in the United States, that their goal is to use the United States Treasury, the blood of American boys and girls, to achieve their goals. That they are using our country for their purposes.
And then they're going to implode it when they're finished.
And then they, yes, it, they have an agenda all their own that has nothing, you know, and it's so funny. I wrote this in my book, The High Priest of War. Their agenda has nothing to do with Americanism. It has everything to do with internationalism and what they call their New World Order.
Well, hang with us, Chris and Mike. We're going to do another segment. I'm sure you got a couple of other comments, Christopher. Darrell Bradford Smith, French Connection. The truth is out here today, ladies and gentlemen, as it is every day. We'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, we're back on this Friday edition of the French Connection. It's a quarter till midnight over here in central France, and I'm just finishing up my my cigar here and relaxing for the last segment here. You know, Chris, you always bring such powerful truth to this program, and I can't tell you how important your observations are. And Michael, this man has been doing research that helps me provide truth to my listeners, and I'm just overjoyed any time he calls in.
Yeah, I don't know Christopher as far as I know. I don't recognize his voice, but I can tell from listening to him that he's a man who does his research and does it well, and I appreciate that.
Well, me too. So, Chris, you got something else to ask Mike?
Hello? I think we lost him.
Oh, boy.
Hello?
Carl, oh, there he is.
Yeah, go ahead.
I would like to point out that it is prophesied that other nations will both finance and fight for Israel. It's prophesied in many places, primarily in Genesis chapter 27, which tells the story of Esau and Jacob. And Esau is to bear the sword and serve Jacob. And that represents the United States at this point. But once that's accomplished, and once Israel has gained dominion over the nations in its neighborhood, God instructs Israel to wipe out those nations which have helped Israel be formed, and commands them that thou shalt not forget it in Deuteronomy chapter 25, verse 19. Now, we also ought not to forget that and ought to realize that Israel is fulfilling its prophecies through deliberate actions, not through God's will, and that its immediate objective, according to prophecy, is to secure dominion over the nations in the region, so that once the Arab and Islamic nations are under control, it can rebuild the temple on the mount, destroy the Dome of the Rock, and the Muslim nations will have no recourse against it and won't be able to fight back against Israel as it does these things. Then Israel will reinstitute ritual sacrifices, and probably one of the descendants of the Rothschilds or someone else will step forward as the Jewish king. And I suspect at that point, many assimilated Jews and others will return to Judaism, and there will be a massive wave of anti-Semitism inspired by Zionists in order to drive them back to Greater Israel, which will extend from the Nile to the Euphrates.
Well,
and when all this is accomplished, we better watch out, because the prophecy says that the European races will be destroyed.
Well, considering the fact that a top Israeli defense analyst, Martin Van Creveld, said a few years ago, he said very frankly, he said, we've got missiles that can reach Rome. I don't put anything past Zionism in Israel. I mean, You know, I'm frankly afraid. You know, we're here on the verge of some sort of a. God only knows what will happen if Israel attacks Iran. You know,
can you imagine the conflagration that will happen if they launch nuclear weapons on Iran? And isn't it amazing that the media is silent on these threats that are being made of utilizing nuclear warfare?
The U.S. Army War College just a couple weeks ago came out with a report saying basically that if Israel would be willing to open up its nuclear weapons programs to international inspection, that perhaps this would be a way to stop the nuclear arms race in the Middle East, and that this might be the way to contend with Iran, because it would put Iran on the defensive. But of course, that story has never been reported. Now, I did a piece about it in American Free Press, and it appeared on two or three websites on the internet, as far as I know. But this is a story that should be reported every night on the national news, that the U.S. Army War College is telling Israel, give up your nuclear weapons, or at least let the world inspect them. Are we hearing that? They tell us to support the troops. Well, my God, I want to support the troops at the U.S. Army War College.
It's
and they're
vitally
saying
important
that Israel
that
should open up their weapons, but it's not being reported.
Well, you know, here's the saddest part about all this. We know this, that we're not going to get the press to report it, Michael. We know that the country is on a slide into destruction. We can see all of the tenets of our constitutional republic already removed. And we can see one of the dumbest and most evil men to ever lead our country working for these people. He's the sickest thing since anything I've ever witnessed. And the facts are, we're not denting them. You said it yourself. You can't even get a guy to stay in a cab while you talk about it. I mean, this is part and parcel of our problem. This show, by the way, is probably the biggest voice in the country to speak out against this, aside from what you've been doing, Mike.
Well, you know, it's really sad because there are so many, even right now within our government, so many people who are making real efforts to try to combat these people. In fact, relevant to that today, Larry Franklin, who was part of this AIPAC spy ring, this Israeli lobby spy ring, he was sentenced to 12 years in jail today for passing U.S. defense information over to the Israelis relating to Iraq and Iran. I mean, how much more on point can you get than that? There are good people in the government who are trying to combat these people, and that's why we need to support them and say, hey, keep it up, because we're out here trying to promote you and promote your cause and let people know that you're doing the right thing.
Well, that takes courage, and I don't think our fellow countrymen have a whole lot of that these days. They'd rather sit in front of a television set and watch football. When we come back, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to finish out the show with my guest, Michael Collins Piper. And thank you, Chris, for your input. Ladies and gentlemen, Daryl Bradford Smith, The French Connections, last segment here. Michael Collins Piper has been my guest for the full hour and a half interview, which is a long visit, Mike, but it went pretty quick.
Oh, yeah, I was surprised to look at the clock and see, yeah.
Well, you know something, you're talking with a very, very well-educated audience of people, extremely well-researched. Many, many, many of them have been sacrificing greatly to bring this truth out into the mainstream. The fact is that we are getting some traction, and we are even moving other websites and other radio programs into this truth, because it's something that can't be denied. And I've got to say this, and I think you'll mirror this. We've always known all our lives something was wrong with this country, Israel. I've, you know, 4 million people, and it's every night it's on the news all my life.
You know, that's an interesting point. That's exactly right. You know, I always draw what I call the I don't have a name to call it. It's just something I always point out that you take a couple other countries that their names begin with I. You got Iceland, and you got Indonesia, and you got Ireland. You know, well, if you do an internet search, I may have said this in your show before, but your listeners can do this for themselves.
Yep.
Take the following phrases: Ireland denied, Indonesia denied, Israel denied, and Ireland, Iceland, Indonesia, and Israel. And you do internet searches on that, and you'll find that Ireland denied Britain a victory, or Ireland denied France a victory in the hockey games, and Indonesia denied entrance to 500 terrorists, and Iceland, you know, but you go to Israel denied. Israel denied massacring Palestinians. Israel denied sending terrorists into another country. Israel denied forging passports of Germany and New Zealand. Israel is constantly in the position of denying. The reason why they're denying is because they're getting caught doing things, and they're denying them. So Israel is a problem. Israel is a problem child for the world, and really it always has been. And, you know, the thing is, I always, you know, I have this Jewish friend who's been to Israel once, and he's very serious about his Jewish faith, and I say to him, you know, look, no one's here to tell you you can't practice your faith, but we do have a real problem here with this little country in the Middle East that the United States backs up that causes all these problems, and yet we let them get away with attacking U.S. installations in Egypt, and we let them attack the USS Liberty.
Hell, and murder 3,000 people in New York City.
Yeah, we didn't even get into that, and that's, you know. But, you know, it's interesting, Daryl. I was on a radio show here a couple weeks ago, and I brought up the subject of the USS Liberty. Someone was coming on saying what a great ally Israel was, and I brought up the subject of the USS Liberty. And you know what the guy said? He says, well, that was almost 40 years ago. And I said to him, I said, well, yeah, I said, but what about the Holocaust? That was almost 60 years ago, and we hear about that every day.
That's right.
Why is it okay to talk about that, but not talk about these very real crimes that Israel has committed and, you know, frankly, continues to commit up to this day? And the reason why it's a problem for Americans is because right now there are American kids in Iraq fighting a war that is not America in America's interest. It was a war of, by, and for the Israeli lobby.
It sure was, and it's being fought on the behalf of the Rothschild family. That'll be the last word for tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks, Michael Collins.
Thank you, Daryl.
You appreciate you keep on working, my friend.
All right,
ladies and gentlemen, we're going to call it a week here, and I hope to hear from all my listeners next week on new programming for the French Connection. See you later.